Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, a place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 62. And it's on to Houston as the Steelers get ready to take on the Texans on Monday.
Oh, no. We're not getting on Houston yet.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, no, we're not. And for I hate to interrupt this epic opening of yours here, but I'm going to do it here. Fresh off my my diatribe the other day there. Look, folks, some people upset about it, obviously, according to a few PayPal things, people obviously like it. Take what I am for what I am. I'm here to amuse you. I like to have a little bit of fun with this, and I like to kind of review what goes on with the Steelers as objectively as possible, just like David does. So, listen to it, compartmentalize. That's a big word there for me at what time is it? 6:30 in the morning. Put it in a compartment and lock it away. Don't get your feelings hurt in these things. But oh no, Dave, we're not moving on to Houston just yet.
I gotta tell you, I don't listen to the podcast once we do it. I compartmentalize it away. but I did listen to the end of that because I got a good chuckle, and we even got some donations, and thanks to those who donated, and in particular, Vince A. Very kind of you, and much appreciated. So, all right, let's get to it. Of course, we aren't going to just put that Patriots game in the rearview window because there is plenty to talk about. And, with some time to look at the film again, to digest some stuff, to hear other people's points of view. Of course, our listeners, other people who are out there analyzing the game, Dave and I learned stuff from them, let's be honest. We'll pull the curtain back needless to say, we don't have all the answers. But, Dave, let's start with just a couple things. Look, the catch has been – I think we've gone through the catch enough. The only point I'll make, one further point about the catch, and, various people brought this up, and it's something that if you want to get technical in the rule book – now, we've gone through exactly what we think and why we think it. But if I want to question my opinion and throw something else out there, I think you can look at the rule book and comment on the line that says initial contact with the ground. Because obviously with Jesse James, his initial contact with the ground is with his knees, right? Now, the way I think it's defined in the rule book is that is a continuing process, knees, our elbows, hands to the ground, and that's one motion. Okay, so that's how I'm defining it. But I do understand some people who said initial contact with the ground is his knees, and then the rest of it is different. I don't interpret it that way, but that was one thing we didn't cover in the conversation on Monday. And I'll just say again, Dave, after we finished the podcast, Dave put up another GIF that you can see, and I really can't see the argument against the fact that the ball's on the ground. Jesse James's left hand is off the ball. It's in the it's palm up, as I mentioned Monday. It's palm up above the ball, and you can see three of his fingers to the right of the ball. So his chest is on the ball. That doesn't connote.
You know better than ask me what's the word.
That's not possession. When two, your pinky finger and your other finger are under the ball and your chest is on top of it, isn't possession in my view. Okay. I'm done with the catch, Dave. If you want to add something to the catch, go ahead.
Nah, look, I've spent enough time on that, babe. People have drawn their own conclusions by now, David. They're either going to believe us or they're going to believe what they want to believe. So let's
talk about the last possession, because Mike talked about it in depth in his press conference yesterday and answered it as best he can. Dave and I did not see the Inside the NFL episode last night. We both have it taped. We'll look at it again. It's not on demand yet. I thought I had that taped. I didn't, unfortunately. But there was some dialogue there. So we start with the Steelers getting the ball, you know, in with 50-plus seconds left. Juju runs down the left sideline. Dave, this is not at all a question of Juju. Juju's done something that Dave and I have never done. It's caught a pass in a collegiate or NFL game and run and had to use your vision to pick what lane is the best lane to pursue. Juju cuts it inside and gets down to the 10. Good on Juju. One of our listeners said to me, again, not in questioning, just curious because we're never going to know the answer. Do you think Juju could have done as well or better had he gone down the sideline? And forget the fact that maybe he gets pushed out of bounds because – and that changes the context of everything in terms of time later on. He had Jesse James in front of him and two New England Patriots coming that direction, Dave. Did it cross your mind at all? It didn't really cross my mind until it was pointed out at me. I don't have a good answer. But he did have a blocker down that lane.
Yeah, I haven't even examined that aspect of it, David, either on the All-22 or the TV. So,
all right, well, our listeners can chime in if you thought if you take a look at it, do you think Juju could have run outrun the Pats down that sideline? Okay, so now let's get to the last thing, and this is again kind of what Mike talked about, Dave, and we discussed a fair bit on Monday. The sequence on the sideline. And what the Steelers decided to do.
All right, before you get there, let's go over what happened after Juju was tackled, the timeout.
Right, and you've got a GIF up there. You can see it in Dave's timeline. It's 16 hours ago from 9:30 Eastern time, so you can figure out when it got put up. So you put it up yesterday, late afternoon, evening. Dave, Ben's running down the field, and he does a 360. He goes all the way around from the Steelers sideline to behind him to the other sideline to back almost another quarter of the way around. It's not clear to me that he ever has any time to make direct contact with Mike Tomlin, eye contact with Tomlin in that spinning sequence. He does not stop his head and pick anybody out on the Steelers sideline. And over his head three times, he taps his hands together in what certainly looks like, I think most objective people would say, looks like a timeout signal. What were your thoughts on what he was doing?
Yeah, and Tomlin, Ben said during his radio show yesterday that he didn't call a timeout, that he was running down there looking at Mike Tomlin to say, hey, are we going to call a timeout? Are we going to call a timeout? Mike Tomlin was asked during his press conference if he called timeout, and he said he did not, and that is the timeout call supposed to only come from the sideline, David, within 2 minutes?
That's a good question. I think you're allowed to call it on the field.
I mean, surely you're allowed, a quarterback's allowed to call a timeout under 2 minutes, right?
Yeah, you can call it at any time. Like, we saw it in the game. I think both quarterbacks at one point in the game stepped away from the line of scrimmage and called timeout. Second quarter and third quarter.
Well, I'm talking, does end of game, or end of half or end of game circumstances change any of that,
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the rules on who can call a timeout is dictated.
I don't remember knowing that either. I may have just put it in a part that I don't, part of the brain that I don't use. And that's a very large portion of my brain. But it does look. I wrote this on Twitter. I'm not a big Tony Corrente fan, but I can see why he maybe thought he was doing the Steelers a favor by calling a timeout after the Juju catch and run. It certainly looks. Now you can say, was Ben giving the huddle up sign over his head to hurry? Is that a hurry up sign? Maybe he was looking behind him to see where all of his linemen were at, if they were going to make it down the field, if there are any players behind him. That argument, I think, is definitely in play there. I don't know. When it was happening I thought he was calling for a timeout. And Tony Romo, not that it matters, did too. And he even praised Ben. Good job, call a timeout.
I had no problem with the time. I had no problem. So they got the timeout called with 34 seconds. Let's say it takes them 10 seconds more.
Well, at least 15, right? I mean,
I don't think so. I mean, the guys are bent near midfield. I think, okay, let's go. We'll split the difference. Call it 13. And that gives you 21 seconds and second down with a timeout, you're not having any trouble running two plays.
Yeah.
So the answer is, I don't think it hurt him, because you shouldn't have any trouble running two plays with 28 seconds and no timeout, and you shouldn't have any trouble running two plays with, you know, let's say even as in your scenario, Dave, 18 seconds left and a timeout. So, okay, so let's continue. So the debate about whether, you know, how they meant to call timeout, I don't fault – I'm with you, Dave. I don't fault Tony Corrente at all, and I don't think it impacted – I don't think it was a determining factor one way or the other. Is that fair?
Yeah, I agree. You know, hindsight now, I obviously like to have it. But at the time, live, I had no issue with the timeout there.
Okay, so now what I was getting to here on this inside the NFL, and our buddy Ben, who was on the podcast on Wednesday, tweeted about this. So basically, I want to make sure I get the quote, because it is quoted here. Tomlin is quoted directly as to what he said on the sideline. Now, again, having Dave and I not seen this, I can't give you the exact moment during the time on the sideline when this was said by Mike Tomlin. But here is here's what Tomlin had to say. So he says to – sorry, it's just taking me a second longer than I thought here. He says to Haley – if it's in the field of play, we got to play. You follow me? You got me? So I assume that at this point, maybe Ben has already gone to the line of scrimmage and meaning Ben has left the sideline and is getting ready to call the first, you know, calling the play that ended up in the DHB catch. Is that a fair assumption, Dave?
I not having seen it yet to be able to fit it into the timeline, David.
Yeah.
We're guessing. I mean, that's not okay, fair. So, that's not fair, you know. So
okay, so the point is here though. This is Tomlin does say, if it's in the field of play, we got to play. You follow me, you got me. And then Tomlin is seen telling Haley, give him a now this is obviously after the DHB tackled in bounds. Give him a play. He can't clock it. Give him a play. Okay, so that does agree with exactly what Ben said, that he was going to clock it and it came from the sideline. Now, obviously, when Ben said it, and Ben said it right in this respect, he said it came from Haley, but it came from Tomlin. Well, obviously, it's coming from Haley because Haley is speaking into his helmet, and Tomlin told Haley, and that's exactly correct. Everything that we understood, what Ben said in his show yesterday, is accurate from the video on the Showtime show inside the NFL. Okay, Dave, what are your thoughts on that?
I still think we're in the wrong chronological order in dealing with this still. I think what we need to do, David, is address the comments that were made by Tomlin about what happened during the review and after the review, and then tackle this portion. You know.
Okay, jump in there. Why don't you fire up what Tomlin said about what the ref said? So Jesse James has scored. So we did the juju part. Now we did the timeout part. So then what's next is James catches the catch, and they're on the sideline.
Right. And let me set this up for everybody, because I wanted to make sure. I'm evidently good at putting together these quote-unquote Zapruder descriptions and all with some of these things here. And what I looked at, I went back and looked at after Tomlin gave his press conference, is what happened from, you know, how much time had elapsed from the time Jesse James was tackled. Okay, from the time Jesse James seemingly scored his touchdown, in other words, from the time he gets up, David, after, you know, and the signal's been made, until Tony Corrente announced that the play was overturned, 3 minutes and 27 seconds of real time elapsed. Did it feel longer than that? It felt longer than that. I got to admit, when I looked at the time stamps here, and it was 3 minutes and 27 seconds from the time James appeared to seemingly score until Corrente announced that the play had been overturned, I felt was like 5 minutes, I guess. So I was a bit surprised it was 3 minutes and 27 seconds. Even so,
That's good info. So when is that? That's from when Jesse James, you know, stands up, basically?
When the touchdown signal and he stands up. Yeah, right in that fraction of time right there.
Okay, so 3.5 minutes. Just out of my curiosity, was there any point when they said I mentioned this the other day. I was making notes and on Twitter, so I don't remember. Was there a point where they said the play's under review, or it was just understood that all scoring plays are under review?
Right. I don't remember, and I don't think they have to announce that because all scoring plays.
So I didn't remember that having happened.
Okay, so we got almost 3.5 minutes in real time from the time Jesse James scores until Tony Corrente waves his hands, incomplete. Okay? That the play's been overturned, incomplete, he waves his hands. That's 3 minutes, 30 seconds. The Steelers' next offensive snap took place right at 50 seconds after Tony Corrente made that announcement. Okay?
That's an eternity.
That's a lot. That you already know your outcome. You know your fate, right? So 50, almost a full minute, because it was right at 50 seconds. The snap took place after Corrente had waved his arms incomplete. All right. So in total, from the time that Jesse James seemingly scored his touchdown to the time the next Steelers offensive snap took place was 4 minutes and 17 seconds.
4:17 from Jesse scoring to the next snap. Okay, yep. Okay, so now we've Kassler, you've established that it's a significant amount of time.
Boy, my old man be proud of me right now, wouldn't he? Yeah. All right, I got something else for you, Judge Todd. 1:55, a minute 55 after. Boy, people are going to have fun with this podcast. 1:55 after Jesse James had seemingly scored his touchdown, Ben is shown on the TV kneeling on the sideline.
Yeah, and that, you know, look, that's not – in hindsight, that's not a good look for anybody because Ben's making an assumption and nobody – and look, okay, it's fine.
Not you know, just Ben. Pretty much everybody's making an assumption.
Right. So that's my point. Ben's making an assumption, which you know, okay, it's not a great assumption on Ben's part, but nobody's telling him that he shouldn't be making that assumption. Nobody's saying, hey, let's you know, we need to consider the alternatives in case. So Ben made an assumption, and nobody dissuaded him from – obviously the action of taking a knee and being there, you know, getting his thoughts together. So that is on everybody. That's not just on Ben.
All right.
And Ben didn't figure it out. Nobody else did either.
Right. Now I just told you 1:55, almost 2 minutes after James had seemingly scored, Ben is shown kneeling on the sideline. Another minute and 3 seconds later, David. Okay. 2:58 after Jesse James seemingly scored, Ben is shown again. Still kneeling on the sideline. This time I think he's praying. He's probably praying that somebody tells him to get a couple plays together.
that's what he should say he was praying for.
All right, so almost 3 minutes after Tony Corrente or after Jesse James seemingly scores, we think that Ben has not talked to anybody about getting a couple of plays. We think. I mean, we can only go what the TV shows us when he didn't.
I think it's a fair assumption to say he did not go over, talk about the plays, and then go kneel for the next 2 minutes.
All right. Now, as I said, that's roughly 3 minutes after James seemingly scored. And let's go back to at 3 minutes and 30 seconds. So 30 seconds after they showed Ben kneeling a second time on the sideline, Tony Corrente announces that the play had been overturned. Okay? So what did Ben do in those 30 seconds? Was he still kneeling? Probably. I don't know for sure. But all right. Now that we have established that, Mike Tomlin was asked during his press conference what transpired as far as the communication on the final play. And I think the question was what happened on the I think the question was aimed for what happened on that final spike play. OK.
Yes.
Well, Tomlin answered a different question. Something must have been heavy on his heart, David. you know, they always tell you, David, or I always learned growing up, whenever you ask somebody a serious question about something, their first answer is always a lie. All right. But anyway, you know, he says a lot of things transpired over the course of that time period. It starts kind of with the review, what potentially could happen coming out of a review. Tomlin says we had a couple of scenarios, and there was obviously touchdown drive over scenario. There was a scenario that should be the last scenario. But
right,
anyway.
It's not a scenario. It's what was called, right?
Right.
So
right.
It's what's on the books.
All right. Then he goes. There was a scenario that transpired that was ruled incomplete. But there was also another scenario that was probably more critical and more time specific that was being discussed. It was being discussed by us. It was presented to us by the officials during a review process that if it gets ruled completed catch, down in bounds, that was probably the most significant element of the discussion as we approached the last play. In short, to sum this, well, he goes on to say why they were in review, that was being discussed because if his knee, by him being James, knee was down in the field of play, there would be a 10-second runoff. They'd spot the ball, wind the clock, and we'd be facing with a running clock in that circumstance. So that probably was the most significant element of the discussion when they were in review, and that was presented to us by one of the officials that they may come out with a completed ball in the field of play, and he gave us an alert that it may include a 10-second runoff and with a running clock. So obviously,
okay, wait. So that you're quoting, just to be clear, so everybody understands, you're quoting Mike Tomlin from his press conference yesterday, there, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Now this is where you want to have everything right on the sidelines, because the guy upstairs doing the replay, whether it's Jerry Olsavsky, whether it's Dan Rooney, whether it's whoever it is who's looking at it up there, and it can be a group of them, has to tell Mike that they're not going to call. I mean, 10 seconds into the review, you say he was not down in the field of play.
No. I disagree with you. Here's my thoughts into that review. 30 seconds into that review process, David, you have to reach the oh crap moment. Okay.
Right. Because it hasn't been quickly just confirmed.
Right. At 30 to 45 seconds after James had scored. And at least
there's a problem. There might be a problem.
Right. Well, there is going to be a problem. In other words, be prepared for the absolute worst case scenario and back it up from there. I don't care what you think, what Jerry Olsavsky or whoever up in the booth says. Well, they might rule him down. Or I don't care what an official coming up to you on the sideline who's not even part of the review process says. Well, you know, they might rule here that he was down in play, and then you're going to get the 10-second runoff and a running clock. I don't care what the TV, because Ben talked about this. He said the TV people were telling us, oh, it's good, it's good, it's good. None of that matters. Nobody's opinion matters. What matters at that situation 1 minute after James scored is this is not going to go well in some form or fashion. So let's assume that's going to happen right now, and let's get a couple of plays called. I don't care. And what's okay? The worst case scenario, the way Tomlin presented it, is Jesse James is down
at the half yard line.
Right, is down at the half yard line. You get a 10-second runoff, and you have a running clock. Okay, that's the worst. What's the best? What's other than James being ruled scored a touchdown? What is the other worst case scenario? Incomplete pass, right at the 7 or 8, wherever they were.
Yes.
Now your play calling
at the 10. Yeah.
Okay. Now your play calling at that point. Sure. You're, Sure, you have 9 less yards to work with on the field. Maybe that does maybe change your play call. But you could probably at least give Ben 2 plays to run. All right, either we're going to be at the 1 or we're going to be at the 10. Choose one of these 2 plays, Ben, and then the second play needs to be X.
Yeah, the thing, the 1 with the running clock means what you're going to have there is you're going to be at the half yard line or the 1, wherever you want to put it, the 1 yard line, and they're going to have a 10 second runoff from 28, so it's going to be 18 and a running clock. And the question is there, obviously you have time to run it to get up and spike it if you don't score. Or you can throw a pass and throw another pass. I mean, at the 1 yard line of the running clock, what you just need to not do is panic. And I think the Steelers showed some panic. That scenario didn't play out. So let's not go too far into that. So go ahead, Dave. So you're it's 28 seconds left. You've gotten the answer. You've had 50 seconds or at least 30 good seconds to digest the answer. That you have 28 seconds left and the ball at the 10-yard line on second down. My initial read on that is, my God, that is a ton of time to easily run 2 plays no matter what happens. Ben could scramble and basically even get sacked, but any play that you run is going to take, six. The Jesse James play, for instance, took 6 seconds. Any other play is going to take, 5 to 8 seconds. To get to the line of scrimmage in a condensed part of the field like that does not take more than 10 seconds. So you should be at the line of scrimmage with a play called. Even if you hadn't called it prior, it should not be a panic moment. For the Steelers, obviously, it was a panic moment.
All right, let's go back to the original Zapruder timeline that I gave you, though. And let's assume, man, so many things are going through your head with those scenarios there, and you're trying to get these different things taken care of. As I mentioned, there was 50 seconds from the time that Corrente announced that the play was overturned to when the next snap took place. You got to be able to give your quarterback at that time. That other scenario that you worried about with a running clock is not in
right
in the picture.
It's no longer something you have to worry about.
Right, and here's another thing: there were still 9 or 10 seconds on the play clock on top of it when that ball was snapped, David. So in essence, you had 1 full minute after
to sort it out.
Right, to sort it out. So there is absolutely no excuse from all of the above. Mike Tomlin, Todd Haley, Ben Roethlisberger to not have 2 plays called in that situation. I feel for you, Mike Tomlin, that all these scenarios were presented to you, yada yada. But and if we're maybe talking about 30 seconds here after Corrente announced it, maybe I'd be a little bit more forgiving, maybe not. But man, 50 seconds from the time Tony Corrente announces that till the ball is snapped again in real time, you got to be able to have 2 plays called.
Okay, I agree. I agree with everything you said. To Tomlin's credit, he didn't throw anybody under the bus in his press conference. He didn't point fingers at anybody. He said, we did what we did.
Are you getting tired of Ben and his passive aggressiveness, or have you been tired of it and all?
The honest answer is I don't give it a lot of thought. I think some of what he said turns out to be accurate. Certainly, look, I criticized Rodney Harrison for the way he characterized Ben in his post-game press conference. When guys say something, coming off the field the seconds after, those aren't things that I don't internalize a lot of stuff out of the locker room, period. I don't, I'll give guys a wide berth for what they say in the locker room. And I don't, these aren't,
no,
these
I'm,
guys.
No, I'm talking more about what Ben has to say on his radio show after you had time to digest.
Yeah, I think he gets a chance to think about all that stuff. And I don't know, in his radio show, I'm trying, what did he say that was?
It's just the
From Todd, from Mike, this is how it happened.
Yeah, the passive aggressiveness, and then taking, you know, and then ending it with the blame, you know, blaming himself, and you know, but I did,
you know, I got it, you know, I.
He has a magical way of deflecting a lot of it, but still at the end saying, "Look, I got to make the play there," you know.
Yeah, and then to saying he took responsibility. Yeah, look, I mean. You know, I'll take the blame for making the bad pass. Well, you made the bad pass. There's, you know, there's no debate about who the blame is on the bad pass. So, yes, I think that's a very fair point.
It just, I don't want to use the word that I used on the Twitter machine yesterday, but he could just be a you-know-what sometimes.
Yeah, and fair enough.
Someone reminded me that I can too, but I also I sit in my basement all day. So.
Right, he gets paid $23 million.
right.
The only other thing I'll throw in here, and this is going to be me chopping Todd Haley off at the knees, is no matter when Tomlin said that, it's clear, obviously, this is a bit, there's video of this. So clearly he said, we got to have a play if it's in the field of play. I mean, you know, that's as clear as it gets. You have said to your offensive coordinator, you need to be prepared. So even if he said it 1 second before the snap, which I doubt, but let's say, you know, when he says, if it's in the field of play, we got to play. You follow me, you got me. So at some point, Haley has to have given this at least a nanosecond of thought that, you know, we're running this play. I need to have something to go to, and it's clear he didn't. So, well, it's a group thing, and I'm with you on faulting Tomlin and that 50 seconds to a minute of not getting that fully communicated. Yes, 100%. I think you're right. And your timeline is very useful in this conversation. So thanks for doing that. That's excellent. So
I think everything. Now, let's back up. Ben throw. I'm watching. Ben to Hayward Bay on this crossing pattern, tackled at 22 seconds clock running. Ben is automatically signaled to clock the ball as soon as Darius Hayward Bay gets up.
Which is dumb. There's 22 seconds left in his third down. That's a mistake on Ben's part.
All right, hold on a minute. I'm gonna go back here. Tackled at 22 seconds. Ben's already signaling clock the football from the time DHB gets up, and the next snap happens at, I think we did this the other day, not 8.5 seconds. All right.
Okay, so it's first of all, it's just a bad mistake by Ben. 22 seconds when you've got to get a, you know, you have to have a play, you know, run and done. You're on the seven.
The reason I'm going back in is, okay, Ben. Mike tells Todd Haley to have a play ready, right? That's why we kind of need to be able to see and fix this into the timeline of when he said it to Ben, because obviously Tomlin's probably saying that to Ben before the DHB play is run, right? Saying it to Haley before the
DHB. Of course he is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So, I mean, does Todd Haley really have time to get Ben a play from the time?
Well, no. He didn't have to get it to Ben. He just has to have it in his head. But I mean, everybody should know here. Ben should know. He needs to know the down, right? He needs to know it's second down, and they want to run another. I mean, he's got to know that going to the line of scrimmage.
But when is he? We already established that DHB play happened after the Jesse James play, David. So, and we've already criticized the coaching staff for not having two plays.
Yeah.
Ready. So how?
But Ben in his head has to know he has enough time to run another play without clocking the ball. He just has to know that as a quarterback.
All right, but we just established from the time DHB is tackled at 22 seconds to the time the next play gets off is 8 seconds. How can Haley give Ben a play in that time and Ben communicate it out in that same amount of time?
Red 32, XY 28.
Well,
that took 2 seconds. Haley's okay, in Ben's headset.
But Ben's already probably not even – Ben's gets up. I mean, as soon as DHB gets up, Ben's signaling clock it.
right? And that's where he's 100% wrong. He has to know as a quarterback that 22 seconds is an eternity to run a play.
Okay,
on
but
third down.
I guess what I'm getting at here,
Ben didn't think at all. We already criticized the coaching staff. Now I'm going to criticize Ben for not understanding the down and the time.
No, you said you wanted to chop the legs off of Todd Haley here.
I chopped it off Haley for not. Now what we don't know is what was communicated in Ben's headset.
Exactly. Remember, right. Ladies and gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen of the supposed jury.
But regardless of what was communicated in Ben's headset, even if it was. I mean, Haley should have set a play, and I guess we can guess that he didn't. That's why I want to kill Haley.
But how can we guess that? I mean, we don't know. I think
if he had communicated a play, it's that because Ben has said, he said, don't clock it, don't clock it. So if he was yelling a play, you'd think Ben would say we had a play. So I do fault Haley in this scenario. I'm guessing a little bit, obviously. We're taking a little license here. But at the same time, Ben has to know with 22 seconds left that he can run a play. They're not running downfield. Nobody got more than 6 yards away from the line of scrimmage. The lineman hardly moved at all. Everybody can be set, no problem. And Ben spends a lot of time gesturing to guys. I mean, he spends 6 or 7 seconds at the line of scrimmage before he snaps the ball. It's not like guys are moving right up to the snap. Guys are set and ready to go with 12, 13, 14 seconds left. He could call a play right there. Everybody's set. He could have spent 5 seconds calling that play and then running the play because the play took 4 or 5 seconds to run. So he had plenty of time.
Yeah, it's just – look, I guess what we've been able to do here is establish that they messed this whole thing up. All of them.
All of them. And it is all of them. Ben didn't think – nobody – and it starts at the top. Mike's job is to think of all the contingencies. Okay? Well, clearly he said something to Todd, but not early enough. And they were worried about things, and maybe they had the perfect plan for the – you know, he's touched down at the one, but that's not the one that evolved. So they didn't have the perfect plan for what did evolve. We do know from the video. Otherwise, you know, it's hard to say what Haley's role was in all this, but we do know from the video now that Haley was told to be ready for a play that happens in the field of play. He clearly wasn't ready enough. And Ben didn't figure any of this stuff out and looked to somewhat panic with 22 seconds left in the ball in play because he didn't have a play. Nobody prepared him to have a play, and he didn't. In his 15 years of experience, didn't set him up enough to either call a play there and realize that he could do that, or he wanted to run the fake clock, or he got overruled, and then after faking the clock or suggesting he was going to clock, he ran a play that didn't have, you know, two of the half the field in the pattern. It was a disaster across the board.
And, you know, Ben explained, too, when you get into a clocking situation, everybody knows, regardless of where you're at on the field, two wide receivers line up on the line of scrimmage along with the five.
The outside guys line up on the line.
Right, and everybody else just holds their water, you know, from there. So already you're taking – you could potentially have – you know, a few people not even being in the play at that point. And, you know, several people are questioning, okay, when the Steelers came out of the Jesse James play, why wasn't Martavis Bryant on the field? Why was Darius Hayward Bay on the field? Yeah, okay, that's a great question to have as well, too. On the flip side, you know.
What do you think the answer to that? I mean, I heard Mike's answer. Should they be criticized for the personnel choice?
Well, I mean, if you're going to run,
you can argue that they had Darius Hayward Bay on the field for the Jesse James touchdown catch, so it worked with him on the field in that situation.
Yeah, was he asked specifically about Martavis Bryant? I don't remember. Why wasn't Martavis Bryant on the field for the last two plays? He says
basically
again,
said this is the personnel we decided to go with.
Yeah, again, we had a myriad of options and discussions going on relative to who was available, what plays we were going to run. What plays you're going to run? You didn't know what plays you're going to run.
None.
Sometimes, look, I know we like these coaches to be candid, but he sat on his thumb yesterday, didn't he? What plays we were going to run, that don't make a lot of sense now looking at these quotes. A lot transpired in a short period of time. The people who we chose to put on the field are the people who we thought could help execute those plays. What plays?
Well, obviously the first play. The play that DHB caught the ball. So.
Right, but even that, did you take it as that was a design play? To
no, but I, you know, DHB was on the field for the prior play with Jesse James, and DHB had a crucial role there as three guys flooded to him coming out of the backfield, so it did open it up. Now, could anybody else have run that? I don't know. Maybe Martavis Bryant doesn't know that play, being in the backfield. I mean, nobody's been in that situation, so good on DHB, and maybe they'd only run it with him. So,
and you know one thing that really I don't think I've seen anybody talk about. It just hit me this morning. What if DHB just makes it one more yard out of bounds?
Oh, yeah, no, I think we discussed it. That's what I say, good play by Malcolm Butler, really good play by Malcolm Butler, because then, you know, it's all moot.
I mean, you get the clock. I mean, if Malcolm Butler doesn't – I mean, if DHB gets out of bounds in that situation
– 22 seconds left, and you're – I guarantee you he's not throwing the pass he threw. How about that?
Yeah, there you go. So, you know, we say circle the plays all the time, right? Circle for about five plays or whatnot. That's obviously one of them that you have to have circled there.
And if you're a Patriot – that's when you stand up in the film room and you give Malcolm Butler a big pat on the back.
Absolutely.
That's a game-winning play right there, folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doesn't look like much, but game-winning play right there.
All right. Have we beat them up enough? Did we miss any of this, David?
No, I mean, that's 55 seconds of game action, and we gave it 45 minutes. So I think we fully covered all of that. There's some more chirping about interference and stuff like that. And look, again, by the letter of the law, probably did he call in that situation? No. And if the roles had been reversed, nobody would expect that call. So I don't have any problem with that.
I think, you know, and he said too, you know, I was asked if Ben would have just spiked it regardless of the play call, would you have an issue? Look, I mean, you have a guy out there that's your quarterback. He's been a quarterback in the league forever. Whatever Ben, you know, look, I don't have deep down inside, I don't have an issue with the fake spike play. What, you know, because we're framing this a little bit different. If he completes that to Eli Rogers, you know, it's just I think, as you like to say all the time, the process sometimes.
That's what I would have been very critical of the process, that they spiked the ball with 10 seconds left and had it down. So I would have been on the whole two play thing. How did they not have two plays ready to go?
But
my criticism if they had spiked it.
Would we love to be having those talks right now about the process?
Yeah, because I'd be – hopefully I'd be yelled at for being an ass, complaining about something where they kicked the field goal in OT and to go to OT and won in OT, and I'm harping about that.
All right.
I've been in that situation plenty of times.
All right. We beat them up enough on that. Mike Tomlin, what did you think about the comments about Rob Gronkowski and not being, you know, basically – not being double covered, you know, during the most important part of the game. To me, I took that response as, well, they were, you know, there were some blown assignments in there.
And that's the reality, you know, that's the thing where Mike doesn't say much of that. And I don't think I really don't think Mike cares what anybody in the media or press says, you know, Dave and I included, believe it or not. You know, I take it to be an honest answer. I just think, you know, I've watched some of those plays again, particularly the stuff down the seam. You know, you guys have broken some of it down. Marco Bowling does a good job of breaking the stuff down. I mean, you can see on the one play, the first play, the second play up the seam, I think it is, where Mike Hilton blitzes off the edge. He doesn't quite get there. Stephon Tuitt just misses getting there. It leaves, Davis – Sean Davis in man coverage, and it's probably on Mike Mitchell. He's supposed to have him bracketed over the top, and Mitchell goes too far to the left side to get back to the middle. And this is, you know, what we talk about sometimes, the other guys making plays and little things making a difference. Well, they had two receivers on the left side, they had two on the right, and the blitz came from the right. You'd think Mitchell would, you know, might stay on the right side. He didn't. He read something that sent him to the left, and he couldn't get back in time. And it was a perfect throw by Brady into the, you know, a narrow window.
Well, what you're doing there is you're trying to show Brady what he thinks is cover two man, okay? Yeah. And then at the snap,
You bring Hilton,
right? And then Davis comes down and replaces Hilton's role and becomes a man, and then that basically becomes a cover one man.
Single high.
Right.
Yeah, single high man.
And Mitchell never makes it to the middle of the field in that situation. And I think I went back and looked. I don't think Brady looked him off in that
situation. No, I don't think he really looked him off either.
In that situation there. And was that a read by, you know, one thing that we'll never know, too, was that a situation where Gronk just makes a fantastic read as well, too, and notices the blitzer and runs straight up the seam? Was that we'll never know that. But regardless, and you know, Sean Davis in that situation, even though he's coming downhill, he has to play outside leverage because you're supposed to force your guy in, you know, if anything,
into the middle of the field.
Into the middle of the field there. And if Mike Mitchell at the snap is 5 yards to the middle of the field, maybe he.
Oh yeah, there's no way he throws it there if he's 5 yards to the right.
Or if he does, at least you have a chance to.
Yeah, you're gonna arrive with the ball.
Right, exactly there. So, in so many words, and this is what Mike Thomas said. There was attention paid to Gronk there with two people assigned to him at times. He was very good, and so was their quarterback. He says, I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge those things. Guys, I understand that second guessing is part of it, particularly when we don't win. I'm not going to be resistant to that. But you're not going to find some of the answers that you guys are looking for. There are a myriad of layers to some of these discussions. They're complex ones. None of it is very black and white. That's just how the games unfold. And then he goes playing, making mistakes on defense on the Patriots' last drive. He says it's really that errors happen often in football. Sometimes the moment makes them notable and worth discussion, but nothing extraordinary happened in those moments. We were making calls schematically to minimize production from them, specifically him. I'm guessing him as Gronk. Sometimes it was effective, sometimes it wasn't. It might be an error in terms of schematics. It might be an error in terms of execution. We don't make excuses. They made the plays. We compliment them for that. We're not seeking comfort. It is what it is. In short, there were some... And look, I mean, so many defensive errors happened during the game, David, that we don't even know, you know? It just happened. Some of these key ones apparently happened at the worst time on that last drive.
Yeah, again, I think at times when the Steeler Nation is overly critical in it or not acknowledging enough of great players making plays. And I think it's naive to think the Steelers didn't understand what a threat Gronkowski was. Other guys are threats too, and they did nothing. Brandon Cooks caught one ball deep, good play by them. He ran a good, you know, post corner early in that game, and really they did nothing offensively in terms of big plays. I mean, there were, you know, we talked about splash plays and whatever. It was all Gronk, and yep, he made them. So the Steelers know what Gronkowski can do, and they had trouble stopping him, just like teams know what Antonio Brown can do, and they have trouble stopping him. I'll keep making the analogy, even though people don't like it, is, you know, sometimes guys get theirs, and unfortunately Gronk got the biggest moment.
And they should have done a better job to not allow him to get his, especially in that final drive. I am making anybody else beat me in that game. So shame on whoever in that situation. Mike Tomlin, Keith Butler, whatever defensive players made the mistakes and didn't execute right during that final drive there, because that's all that matters at that point. But as I said after the game, and wrote during the game and talked to you, I think, the other day about this game was all on the offense, if you ask me. I thought the Steelers defense did enough up until 4 minutes left in that game, just under 4 minutes to win the game there. Everything that happened from the time the Steelers offense took the field with just under 4 seconds is all on the offense and the offensive coaching staff for not winning that game, if you ask me.
Obviously there's a lot of blame to go around at the end of the day, but I'm with you. We've talked about the drive before where the Steelers went 3 and out. They did throw the ball on second and third down. I think that was the right thing to do. I like play action on those early downs. We've seen them convert that kind of stuff. I wouldn't have gone for it on 4th and 1 from where they were. I think it was a long one. I didn't have a problem with the punt. They didn't make the stop. You know, we all know how it went. So blame to go around. But at the end of the day, still, I will tell you that my overwhelming feeling after 50 minutes of, you know, kind of breaking this down and being very critical, my overwhelming feeling is the Steelers played one of their best overall football games, maybe their best overall football game in this game. And they lost, but I am fully of the belief that the Steelers can beat the Patriots in New England if they play at that level. They get Antonio Brown. The Patriots are going to get guys back too. They'll probably have Branch and Van Noy and Hogan and other guys back. It's going to make it difficult on their side if these two teams meet. And let's just throw out one other thing here as we talk about going forward, looking forward. Remember, if the seeding goes like it is and the first round games go as expected in terms of the home teams winning, the Chiefs will go into New England in the divisional round, and the Jags will come to Pittsburgh in the divisional round, and both those road teams won in those stadiums. Opening day, Chiefs beat the Pats. Everybody knows the Jags-Steelers story. So neither of those teams are going to be afraid. So a lot of football to play now to then, but I'm not of the belief the Steelers can't go to New England and win that game.
Look, Dan, as I said the other day, they did everything on Sunday except win the game. And I know that sounds kind of, brilliant analysis, Captain Obvious there. But, it really is a fact. I mean, I said this the other day, too. I'm not, Ben played a great game. You like that final play back, but we went through all the incompletions and all like that, David. It was a fantastic game on his part. Remember that they did this, most of the game second half for sure without Antonio Brown, yada, yada. So, this is a team that I think we saw can definitely compete with the Patriots. Obviously, you would like to be able to compete against them again on your own home field. It's going to be a huge advantage for New England if they not that they need it or deserve it, but at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough either. All right, let's wrap up what else, Tom. And for those of you kind of want to know, we have a what's his name, Drew
Texans. Beat writer coming up in about 10 minutes.
Right, as well. As far as injuries go, and specifically Antonio Brown, Mike Thomas says he has a significant contusion to his lower leg. He can be characterized as out this week. I do not want to frame it in any other way. I think it's simply too early to tell, and then you end up backtracking and all like that. So, we're not going to see Antonio for the next two games, and hopefully the Steelers can get a bye. We have several weeks to kind of worry about this. Dr. Mel thinks that Antonio Brown will be should be good to go by playoff time. There, you can read her post up on Steelers Depot. Other injuries that Mike Tomlin talked about, James Conner, obviously the MCL injury was serious enough for him to have surgery. He was placed on IR. He's done for the season. Stephen Ridley, former Patriots running back, really hasn't played much of any last couple of seasons, was signed to the 53-man roster. I was a little bit surprised by that move, David. I don't want to get too deep into that that roster move just yet, but he's probably going to be your number three running back for now, behind Fitzgerald, Toussaint, and Le'Veon Bell. Obviously, they chose not to promote Watson.
I kind of like the move just as a first blush.
Yeah, what are you going to get out of him right away? I think you're looking more at what he may or may not be able to do for you in the playoffs. But even then, Le'Veon Bell is going to be your main horse. One interesting thing about Ridley is during his rookie season, he did return a few kickoffs. I don't even want to, you know, knowing Tomlin how this thing has gone to kickoffs, I don't even want to, you know, so did Jordan Todman. He was experienced in kickoffs, and we know how all that worked out. So I don't even want to spend a lot of time going on that possible scenario. But he is an experienced guy, not a big out of the backfield catch guy. But I think he can wear a few hats for you as well. Ramon Foster came in reporting concussion-like symptoms on Monday. He's in the concussion protocol program right now. Vance McDonald and Joe Hayden could be available to us, so that's a positive there. As far as Tomlin said, I'm trying to think if I missed anything. Marcus Gilbert obviously back with the team this week as well, too. So I think that that gets some of the housekeeping out of the way. Anything else from what Tomlin and Ben said on Tuesday that you want to cover, David?
No, I don't. I'm trying to think if there was. So much of it was game focused. Obviously, he went through the Texans and that situation. But no, the injuries. You know, the Connor surgery wasn't a surprise. You know, unfortunate, not a surprise. I mean, like we said, the guys had incredible. You know, been incredibly unlucky with injuries. And the whole. I did bring this up when he was drafted. And I do think it's something the Steelers have to be concerned about is, you know, the who knows where Le'Veon Bell is going to be next year. But James Conner's injury history is something that's got to play into how they look at the running back situation.
Yeah, right now, it's still way early in this. But, I mean, is James Conner and a 300, 400 touch a season guy? Probably not.
Probably not.
You know, so we'll,
let's talk a little Pro Bowl here before we get to our beat writer. You know, we mentioned the Ryan Shazier stuff and the Duke Johnson stuff and the last thing. I think one thing that we overlooked, unfortunately, in our in all the things that come out is Cam Hayward was named the Steelers' Walter Payton nominee, right? Man of the Year. And, you know, I think we've said this before and we've talked about all the good things that guys like Al Villanueva, Arthur Motes, you know, maybe stands out as much as anybody. William Gay. I mean, there's a long list of guys who do important things in the community and really give back. And, over the course of the year, we hear a lot about, you know, negative things that happen with NFL players. And, you know, we try to highlight some of this stuff and we probably don't do a good enough job of it. But, man, there are not many better guys out there than Cam Hayward in terms of what he does. Just, you know, I can speak personally in his relations with the media, but what he does for the community, much more important, that kind of stuff, and a very, very deserving nominee for Walter Payton Man of the Year from the Steelers selection, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a shame to see him not get in, you know, to the Pro Bowl. But when you're sandwiched in there with guys like Joey Bosa and Calais Campbell and Khalil Mack, who's actually an outside linebacker, I mean, you almost have to win the fan portion of the vote, right? Even though that's
and look, you know, I said this all along, and I know a lot of people were hoping, and I said, you know what, he's not going to make it, and it's just, you know, he did get to double digit sacks. I think what happened is this is the year, I think, similar to, you know, we've seen this happen with players. Often they're a year late in getting recognized. David DeCastro is an obvious example. When you have your kind of breakout best performing season, is not often the year you make the Pro Bowl the first time. You have to have your name out there. People have to say, you know, some other people say, well, you know, this guy was overlooked, and then you have to go do it again and you get that opportunity. Cam Hayward's problem is being a 3-4 guy in a defense that, you know, was, you know, up and down this year. Started great, didn't finish great. He did get the double-digit sacks, but, you know, if you're going to look at sack numbers, he's generally going to lose even because he's not an edge rusher. So because of the way the positions are, you know, there's no 3-4 defensive end spot when he might be, you know, number one if there was, but there's no – so I don't think Cam got jobbed in this. I think he's next. Hopefully he'll go if somebody drops out, you know, as an alternate. But I didn't actually see the alternate list, Dave, if they were listed. But I don't think Cam got screwed is just what it comes down to.
Well, hopefully he doesn't go at all. Hopefully
they're
too busy. You know, being selected to the Pro Bowl does not mean you deserve to be selected to the Pro Bowl.
And the Steelers had one of those. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I have been an Alejandro Villanueva fan from about his upside from way back. People got tired of me writing about a practice squad tackle on Steelers Depot way back. You know, but you know, I thought there might be something there. Did I ever dream that he'd end up being maybe the starter and getting the kind of contract that he got? Probably not. And look, Alejandro, you want to talk about good human beings? Alejandro Villanueva is definitely one of them. But Alejandro Villanueva is not a Pro Bowl left tackle.
Alejandro Villanueva made it because of the anthem stuff. And I good on people for voting for him. That's what part of the fan participation vote is for. But yeah, he's not one of the three best guys in the AFC.
Antonio Brown, obviously deserving. We already covered Alejandro. David DeCastro, I think, is deserving. Marquise Pouncey,
questionable.
I mean, make no mistake, that guy, I mean, he's still one of the better. I guess the question is who would you put ahead of Marquise Pouncey in the AFC? So, you could make arguments for him belonging there. Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, if not for the last couple of games, I mean, If this was 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, I don't know, but
if it was 4 or 5 weeks ago, you'd find somebody else, probably Alex Smith, and you can you probably still debate who should go behind Brady in terms of Smith. Their downfall really cost him, and he wasn't really the reason for it. Their defense was terrible for a while. Phil Rivers was good late. That had better to be good late than be good early and bad late. So he got some recognition. But Ben's play at the end probably got him in there.
Right. I don't take issue with that. Le'Veon Bell, look, I think even the last four games, people say, man, you're crazy. Le'Veon Bell's had this thing locked up all along. he hasn't been great on the ground. Where Le'Veon Bell deserves this Pro Bowl, in my opinion, is his ability to make plays out of the backfield as a pass catcher and his ability to block. I think that his durability, I guess, I get too stats-driven at time. In order to lead the league, even though you have a bad yards per carry average, you still have to be out there snap in, snap out, being able to carry the football. So, yes, he deserves some credit there. So, yes, Le'Veon Bell absolutely does deserve to be in the Pro Bowl there. Ryan Shazier. You can make arguments either way, right? I mean,
yeah.
I'm not even going to go there. Let's not even go there. Chris Boswell, damn well deserving, especially the last 3 or 4 weeks. He's made some high pressure kicks. Boy, you don't worry so much when a Steelers kicker kicks from 50 yards right now at Heinz Field with Chris Boswell. So, look, I think you can look at the Villanueva one and maybe raise your eyebrows quite extensively. Other than that, no huge issues, I guess.
No, I don't. And again, Cam, not. He had a pretty good season. I don't know that it's his best season. Last season, obviously, he had a great first half before being out for the second half of the year. Certainly, sack numbers, it's his best season, but that's not the only thing. And Dave's done Dave and the guys have done a fair bit of work on defenses running to where they run and where they've had success. So that's part of it. But yeah, I'm with you overall. I think that, the Steelers are well represented. Let's put it that way. There's nobody who you say got left out and should be in there.
Right. Cam Hayward, you can make your argument on him, obviously. And Ben evidently just did in the locker room today. He says, great to have 8 Steelers voted to the Pro Bowl, but he felt like Cam Hayward got snubbed. Okay. All right. Should we get get Drew Daugherty in?
Yeah, let's get into the Texans. Give you some thoughts on that. We'll talk about we'll get a little Marvin Lewis chat and wrap things up. Okay, we have beaten the last 55 seconds of Steelers Patriots to death officially, and we will leave that behind now and turn our focus Wednesday. Pleased to be joined by Drew Daugherty, who covers the Houston Texans. Drew was with us 3 years ago. You can follow him on Twitter. It's at his name, last name first, Daugherty, D-O-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y, first name Drew, D-R-E-W. That's his Twitter handle. works for Texans TV. You can find him if you're at the game on Monday on Christmas Day. If you're down there, I know we've got listeners in the Houston area. He'll be on the Jumbotron during the game giving some updates. Drew, thanks again for being with us on the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, it's great to be with you guys. You sure you don't want to keep beating that Patriots thing? Because we've lost about 10 games down here, so we'd be happy to talk about anything but us, you know.
Well, kidding.
I love my job. I love my team, but we've had a tough season to say the very least.
Yeah, for those who haven't been following it closely, of course, the Texans 4-10, their season dominated by injuries. I think people are aware J.J. Watt went out very early. Whitney Mercilus went out very early. And then, of course, Deshaun Watson came in the second half of the first game and kind of lit the league on fire through seven games. Then he goes down, and Donta Foreman, one of the draft picks running back out of Texas, local guy. It's been brutal, Drew, 4-10. Let me start with the first question, big picture. Do you expect Bill O'Brien to be back as the head coach next year? I know he got a strong endorsement from Deshaun Watson in the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I do. I do think he will be back. There is no disguising what sort of magic happened when Watson was in the lineup and how this offense transformed itself and did different things with him under center. He alone is amazing and fantastic and going to make a lot of offenses much better. But the schemes they drew up with him in there and with the weapons around him, it was really a lot of fun to see, and it kept opposing defenses off balance. And I think were it not for Watson, you know, if he wasn't around right now and this team was 4-10, you would have a bleak, bleak outlook for the future. But with each one of these games, at least, you know, people in the building, and I imagine a lot of our fans are thinking, boy, I wonder what this would look like with Deshaun in there. You know, I don't think you go into Jacksonville and you get thumped like you do. You know, there's just so much promise, and it's so exciting what this future holds with number four under center.
Okay, so, you know, we got to think about what's going to happen Christmas Day. Mm-hmm. And the quarterback situation, people here are familiar with Tom Savage. People saw kind of what happened with him a couple weeks ago. T.J. Yates is the guy. What is the quarterback situation? What do we expect to see coming up on Monday?
You know, I think it's probably going to be T.J. Yates again. Savage has been in the concussion protocol. Don't know if we're going to see him again this season. It's not been ruled out yet. We'll know a lot more on Wednesday afternoon after the Texans get through with practice and we hear from Bill O'Brien. But I imagine you're going to see T.J. Yates Christmas Day. Pardon me. I think it's still a little early to see Savage yet, and I just think you'll see the old Yates, who's been here since he's been here in 11 and came off the bench then as a rookie and helped win a playoff game, Texans' first playoff game. He was here through 13, got let go, came back in 15, won a few games for the Texans, and now he's back again. So he's kind of like the emergency guy you call to fill in, and you know he kind of knows where all the bodies are buried, so he's one of those good guys to have around. But he's just struggled. You know, he's a backup quarterback, and he understands, and this is the third quarterback the Texans have been through this season. And on top of being a backup quarterback, he's surrounded by, other than DeAndre Hopkins, who's playing at an all-pro level, he's surrounded by a lot of uncertainty up front on the offensive line, and then just some weapons gone because of concussion in both the top two tight ends, Ryan Griffin and CJ Fedorowicz. So it's been a tough year, and he's been nice to see, but he's struggled. You know, he's had a tough time since he came back in.
Drew, let me just follow up on the Savage thing for one second. Was there any fallout? Has there been fallout about how that was handled? You know, everybody saw the kind of people use the term seizure. I don't know what the right term to use is, but what's been the reaction and the fallout of that?
There were questions from the media about it, but from the Texans' standpoint, they didn't do anything. I mean, that's not controlled by them. That's
right.
An independent league official, league doctor that makes that determination. And you know, Bill O'Brien's coaching a football game. He's on the sideline. He doesn't have the video replay. And so when they tell him Savage is ready to go back in, send him back in. And then when he came back out, he kind of talked with him and everyone realized, no, we need to keep him in. He's not right. Because as you guys know, concussions, no two concussions are the same. And sometimes concussions take a little bit of a different effect in people. It takes a little bit longer to show up. And that's what happened, we think, with Savage. So, no fallout internally, but it's just you get the questions naturally from the media. Excuse me.
When you look at what Hopkins is, I mean, even if you don't follow the Texans, you know you're a fan of the NFL, you have to know who Nuke Hopkins is. Done some amazing stuff this year. Obviously played a great defense in the Jacksonville Jaguars this past week, and that secondary, geez, they have to be closing in on 20 interceptions.
They're amazing.
The secondary alone, there.
They're amazing.
What unfortunately, because we've had to spend so much time on recapping this Patriots. Game this past weekend. I haven't focused a lot on the Houston Texans tape from that game, but overall, last three or four games, what are they trying to do? Are we just seeing a lot of bracket coverage on Hopkins and him just being able to win his share of the times, a la kind of like what Antonio Brown has done for the Steelers?
Yeah, and I'm bummed that we're not going to see Brown, because I think Brown and Hopkins are your two clear-cut all-pro receivers this year. I think they're the first team all-pro receivers. If one isn't leading the league in a category, he's second, and vice versa. You know, Hopkins is a leader in touchdowns. Brown's leader in receptions and yards, and Hopkins is right behind him in those categories. So it's really a shame that he's not going to be out there. But as far as Hopkins, he caught four passes last weekend for 80 yards and a score, but they did a good job. I mean, Jalen Ramsey was on him most of the day. He was targeted 13 times, caught four passes. So Hopkins won some battles, but Ramsey, you have to give him credit. He did as well. Now, before that, Hopkins wasn't playing against the caliber of corner that he was playing against in Ramsey. So he was feasting. You know, the week before, he had seven more catches. He had 70-plus. He had 100-some yards in the loss to the 49ers. So he's putting together a phenomenal season, and he's done it and caught and produced despite who's thrown in the ball. Whether it was Yates, excuse me, I'm getting over the flu down here. Whether it's Yates, whether it's Savage, whether it was Deshaun Watson. The only time he has struggled was last season, and that was when Brock Osweiler was here. So, yeah, it's really nothing short of astounding what this guy's putting together, and he's showing that he's a top-flight elite receiver.
But before I get to my second question for you, on those 13 targets, have you gone back through those? Were they bad throws? Were any of them catchable footballs? Were just not on the same page?
A lot of them were Yates was getting hit as he threw or had to dump it early. Some of them were, it was good coverage by Ramsey. You know, you got to give them credit. That you guys mentioned it. That defense, I don't think there's a better corner tandem in the NFL. I've been working for the Texans since 2009. And at least in terms of defenses that the Texans have played in that span, this is the best defense they've ever played, this Jacksonville defense. I mean, I don't think it's close either. I think the only one that can compare to it was maybe the 13 Seahawks wound up winning the Super Bowl. Texans scored about 26, 27 points on those guys. So I think this is just a much more ferocious defense because you have the corners, you have a pass rush. Those front four, they don't need to blitz. And I think all of them have, what, 8 sacks apiece, and you got Calais Campbell. And then on top of that, they got competent safeties, and they have middle linebackers that can move. So this is a really, really salty defense.
Obviously, just looking at the box score from that game, I'm going to assume Alfred Blue got a lot of work because the score got out of hand. They like to use him out of the backfield more as a receiver than Lamar Miller. When you look ahead to this game against the Steelers, one would think that they would take the Jacksonville Jaguars approach against the Steelers from earlier in the season and try to run the football and shorten the game. Is that kind of what you're expecting? You expecting a large dose of Lamar Miller early in this game against the Steelers on Christmas?
Well, that's something they want to do. They, over the last month or so, they've kind of gotten away from being able to run it the way they'd like. But if they can run it, they'll definitely try to do it. Bill O'Brien always preaches balance, always stresses the importance of the run game, and he's going to want to run it. But if you're getting bottled up and getting stopped in the line of scrimmage or getting dropped for a loss, they're going to have to throw it. And if they do, look out, because, I mean, this team, one thing that is black and white about the Texans, they are awful when they are minus in the turnover differential category. They have not won a game. Now, when they're positive, they're undefeated. If they're even, they're about 1-3. So they've got to find a way to flip that script. And if they have to keep throwing and throwing and throwing, it's not a good, usually not a good recipe for success, at least this season for them.
When you look at the two lines for the Texans and what they're bringing to the table, just give us an overview on each side.
Well, offensive line, it's been a struggle the whole season long. They started the year without their franchise left tackle, Dwayne Brown. He held out, came back and played one game at Seattle before they traded him away to Seattle. So there's been a lot of stuff in flux there at that spot. And then they lost the guy who was filling in for him, and Chris Clark. He's done for the season. The guy playing left tackle now is Jeff Allen. He's a right guard normally. He's out with a concussion, so you're probably not going to see him. You're going to see a rookie in Julione Davenport, Bucknell's own Julione Davenport. So you guys can appreciate that,
guy?
I know.
Are you a Bucknell guy?
No, I know. I'm just talking a couple Yinzers. So, you know, I'm talking to guys from Pennsylvania.
You're just a couple hours away. I know plenty of
I know my audience. I know my audience. Right, I know who I'm speaking with, you know. I mean, come on. Julione Davenport's going to play left tackle. He's got, you know, arms as wide as a bridge. So it's going to be interesting to see how he does. And then his left guard, Xavier Suofilo, he and the right tackle, Breno Giacomini, they've been the consistencies in terms of they've played the whole season. They've started the whole season. Now, as far as playing well, they've struggled like everybody else. So it's just been tough. And then on top of everything, their best offensive lineman, Nick Martin, their second-year center, he's done for the year now with a leg injury. He just got lost in the last game. So it's been an awful season for the Texans injury-wise, and they just lost their best offensive lineman because of it.
In terms of what's going on, longer-term injury situation with Watt and Merciless, is the prognosis that, you know, they're going to be back next year and everything's, you know, good to go?
Yeah, Whitney Merciless and Watt were lost in week 5, Kansas City, Sunday nighter, October 8th. Merciless went down with a pectoral muscle injury. He should be back for spring football. He'll be okay. He's going to play next season, knock on wood, and be able to go through conditioning and all that stuff. Watt, it's going to be a little longer. He has a tibial plateau fracture. So the very tippy top of your leg bone where it connects to your knee and thigh and all that stuff. It's going to take a while, but he is walking. He's coming back. We see him in the facility. He's in good spirits. Allegedly, he's ahead of schedule. I say allegedly just because I'm not a doctor, but he's confident that he'll be back, and I'm not going to bet against that guy knowing what he can do. So those two guys come back, and you couple them up with what Clowney's done, and there's a lot of optimism for next season.
Yeah, you look at the linebackers, and that's what, you know, people are aware of Clowney, and he's kind of had the step forward that everybody's been hoping for, and mm-hmm. people are certainly aware of Cushing. I'm interested in Zach Cunningham out of Vanderbilt, second-round pick.
Yeah.
He's a guy who fluctuated a bit. People thought maybe he'd go late first round, then some people had him dropping further in the draft. He and McKinney on the inside, how are they doing?
Well, Zach Cunningham has quietly been one of the bright spots in this season for the Texans. I mean, you see why he was considered a possible first rounder. He's all over the field. He plays with force. He plays with a controlled violence, comes downhill. He can cover a little bit. Very, very talented young guy. And it's going to be really fun to see what the future holds for him, because the Texans like what they have in Bernard McKinney. He's the other inside linebacker. He's a guy that's got the green dot on his helmet that's relaying the plays in, kind of leads the unit. Hasn't had as good a year this year as he did last, but that can be said about a lot of folks on this team. But those two guys, you think you have pretty nice cornerstones there in the middle inside at that linebacker spot. But Cunningham has been just a really, really positive part of this defense. And then on top of that, they kind of struck gold. They found a guy as an undrafted free agent. He's a rookie named Dylan Cole, who he's got a pick six this year. He made another interception and hurt his knee back around the middle of the season on a play. He looked like a cornerback making this interception, but he's a really athletic guy. He's a really fast guy and can cover. So they think with those three young guys, they've got a nice bright future there.
Two final questions for me. And the first one was going to be about two players, but you already hit on one when Zach Cunningham, because I broke him down kind of extensively prior to the draft because mm-hmm. I mean, he fits what the Steelers do, you know?
And
you know, so obviously good to hear about update on him. I look forward to kind of looking over some of his tape here in the next few days here. So thanks for talking about him. Mm-hmm. The other guy I want to talk about is Joel Heath, as another guy that I broke down prior to a couple of years ago from him coming into the league there. A guy that out of Michigan State that I thought, you know, he didn't get a lot of playing time at first. I think they were trying to feel what he does best. And I think there was a position switch maybe in there. But I thought, man, this guy looks like he could be a Pittsburgh Steeler. And more importantly, it looked like he is a guy that can play in the league at sort of a five-tech defensive end.
Yeah.
How's he playing?
Yeah, you know your football, because I don't know why that guy didn't get drafted. He came in.
I don't either.
Yeah, he's a football player. I mean, he would fit with you guys. He fits with the Texans. I think he'd fit just about most places. He can play defensive line. I mean, they've moved around a little bit on this line. Mike Vrabel, obviously, kind of from that Romeo Crennel school of defense, where you move your playmakers around, you move your front seven around quite a bit, and he's no different. I think Heath came in last year. The Texans clinched the division last year in week 16. So they played essentially not a meaningless game, but a game that had no impact on where they stood playoff wise at Tennessee in week 17. So you didn't see Clowney. You didn't see a lot of the other big names. They were held out and made inactive. So Joel Heath got a lot of playing time in that game, had two sacks. It's just been a matter of getting a chance and getting opportunity. And there's always guys that when that happens, when they get their chance, they wind up doing good things. And that's what Joel Heath did last year. And then darned if he doesn't get hurt in the playoff game. So he has to spend time in the offseason rehabbing his leg. And then he got hurt a little bit during the preseason and didn't get to get a full preseason under him. So it's kind of one of those incompletes this year for him, because he's sort of battled injury, but he's absolutely a player. Led the team in tackles last weekend at Jacksonville. He's somebody that is definitely a part of the future here, at least in a reserve role, and maybe even wiggling his way into a starting role opposite Watt there at defensive end in 3-4 here.
Second part of my question, and you know, obviously I got to watch a little bit of more tape. Everybody knows about Kevin Johnson and all too. That's not a guy that would have fit what the Steelers do.
Mm-hmm.
Is the secondary right now, with all these injuries, is the secondary the best part of this defense? I mean, I know you look at this game against the Jaguars and the highlights alone, you probably say no, but
right.
I mean, is the secondary right now the best part of this defense?
You know, I would still go back to saying the middle linebackers, Jadeveon Clowney at outside linebacker defense. I think that's the best part of this defense. The secondary's had some problems, and that's a lot of that due to injury. Jonathan Joseph, he's the stalwart on this team. He's a cornerback. I think he's playing through something. You know, as far as the rest of the secondary, Kevin Johnson, he's kind of been starting and stopping injury-wise as well. He's missed some games. He missed some time in training camp with an injury, came back late. So it's a lot like what I was talking about before with an incomplete on Joel Heath. Kevin Johnson's been injured, you know, and so I don't know if we have the full, you know, if we've seen the full range of what he can totally do, but it's been a struggle lately for the secondary, and you know, it's something that I think they'll be able to fix once you get the pass rush going again, like you think you can in 2018.
All right, Drew, let's break it down to what do the Texans have to do to win this game? Let's kind of put the turnover battle at neutral, because obviously if they get a +3 in the turnover battle, they'll be in good shape. But what are they going to do to beat the Steelers?
You know, they got to have some big plays out of Hopkins. They got to find him deep, which I think, you know, it's a possibility against almost any team. So they got to get some good stuff there. Like you guys were mentioning earlier, running the football can go a long way towards helping this team. And I know you just said I can't use the turnover battle, but I got to use the turnover. I mean, they got to get some takeaways, man. I'm sorry to cheat the system here, but they got to get takeaways. They haven't been doing it. They just have not been doing it, and they have to figure out a way to make that change, because they'll lose if they don't. I mean, there's no way they win without winning the turnover battle.
You want to give us a score?
No, I really don't, actually. It's been a long season. Come on. I'm coming on and doing this nice podcast with you guys, and you're setting me up for – no, it's going to be Christmas Day. Come on, man.
Plus, you work for the team officials' website.
Brought up Bucknell, and you guys are asking me to give a. Well, come on, come on.
All right, fair enough.
Drew, love how we appreciate it.
How have we played so few? How have we played so few times these two franchises?
I think we've guaranteed. Are you guys guaranteed fourth place? Not yet, huh?
No, that might come down to week 17 when the Texans tangle with the Colts in Indianapolis. Yeah. So we may be
tangling next year. I think Dave do we have the South next year? So we get
no. Yeah. I think it is, isn't it?
No, we got the East. We got the East. I've looked this up. Trust me, I've already looked this up. We got Buffalo in town. Yeah.
Well, fingers
maybe
crossed.
In the postseason. Maybe in the postseason next year.
Right. Yeah, you're definitely right here because the Steelers play the West and the Steelers play the West next year. So now they will get the South champion. So probably Jacksonville.
Yeah,
they do get that. So Well, we'll have to wait a couple more years. Unless the playoffs next year. But David, go ahead and close them out.
Yeah, Drew, appreciate your time. I'm going to be down in Houston sometime over the winter catching some Rockets basketball with a buddy of mine. So I'll definitely be in touch, and they've been fun to watch. But, hey, Merry Christmas to you and yours, and thanks for taking the time to be with us on the Terrible Podcast.
Merry Christmas to you guys. Always fun talking with you, and look forward to talking with you again soon. Sound good?
All good. Okay, Dave, good stuff from Drew. Let me ask you this question. I think – most people just assume the Steelers are going to win these two games. Are you concerned about either one?
No, but I wasn't concerned about the Jaguars game or the Bears game. What other ones were in there? The Colts game, how it is with this team, David. So,
one concern you more than the other? The this game being on the road, is that more of a concern, or the Browns maybe looking to avoid an Ofer? Does that raise any issues?
Man, really, nothing on paper, on tape, what I've seen says it should be a concern either one of these teams. If I had to pick one of the two, it'd probably be Houston, just because they got a few offensive weapons and they got a few defensive weapons. So, and as you said,
I think
this
Yates
one on the road.
Yates and Kizer can't give you too much concern, but we'll see how it goes. Marvin Lewis resigns or just says he's going to step down. He's been working on a one-year contract for a couple of years now. It seems from the reports from, the guys that we know who cover the Bengals that – he maybe caught the Bengals a little bit by surprise, not that necessarily he was going to be offered a job or not. Just he went in and said, look, I've made a decision that, I'm going to move on. I don't think anybody's surprised that he's not going to be the coach next year, but that's how it went down. Dave, I don't know exactly. I tweeted a bunch of stuff Sunday morning. Marvin Lewis's legacy is interesting because he is like a 570 winning percentage against the NFL non-Steelers. And he's 8-24 against the Steelers. He's, I think the numbers were, he's lost 14 of his last 17, 9 of his last 10 against the Steelers. Everybody knows he's 0-7 in the playoffs, 0-2 against the Steelers in the playoffs. Is Marvin, what's your takeaway from, what will Marvin Lewis's legacy in Cincinnati be?
Undisciplined players.
Will that be the overarching legacy? I mean, he took a terrible franchise and made him competent, but do you think that'll be the driver for him as a coach?
Yeah. And how much of that's because of Mike Brown? I mean, would Marvin Lewis to me seems like a great human that maybe didn't have control. Obviously Mike Brown's one of those guys that probably, and his daughter are probably the ones that make personnel decisions in there. So I don't think he had say. I bet there were times he wanted to just cut Pac-Man and Burfict loose just to move on to get the attention of people. I guess what is his legacy? Is his legacy he can't beat the Steelers? I mean, is it his
it's certainly his, I think the playoff thing will be the first. He's tied, I think, for the record there at 0-7. you know, for those who don't remember, Marvin Lewis was a Steeler linebacker coach under Bill Cowher. He went to he was the Ravens defensive coordinator for a long time and a very good one. And Marvin Lewis might be one of those guys. Look, he was there's no doubt that Marvin Lewis was a successful head coach. Now, we know the Bengals are cheap, and maybe there were times here that they should have moved on from Marvin Lewis. But he's got a lot of wins under his belt as an NFL head coach, and he was successful. But I think you're right. Maybe he's one of those guys who is, because I don't know how to say it. Maybe he was better off being a coordinator, but he has been successful. So I don't know what exactly Marvin Lewis's legacy is going to be. I don't think he'll ever get another head coaching job, but I do think he will be in somebody's front office next year. He said he wants to continue. He's an older guy. I think he's – what is he? I had this – 69. I mean, I'll look it up here in a second. But, like Tom Coughlin, I think that's the role that Marvin – and Tom Coughlin, he's 59, be 60 in September. So he'll be with somebody next year. Zimmer in Minnesota.
He's had some good defenses over the years with the Bengals as well, too. And I'm with you. I don't think he gets a head coaching job again, but I think he can still be a defensive coordinator in this league. I mean, heck, look what he did with Baltimore there. The thoughts run through my mind. Could you at any point envision him – on the Steelers staff in some capacity?
No. I take that back now that I think about, Mike Tomlin. I don't know what Mike and Marvin's relationship is because he's already been here. But that is the type of thing that Mike Tomlin does. He gets qualified guys to come in and say, Mike Munchak's the most obvious example. You say, Marvin, you want to come in and coach the linebackers? If there were an opening, there doesn't appear to be an opening. But that's an interesting thought, Dave. I'd never thought of it. Never considered it.
And is he more of an inside or an outside linebacker guy or just linebackers in general? The more I thought about it, I thought I could envision down the road maybe him another year or two in Pittsburgh. I don't know. But it's a good question there about him. I'm not overly surprised, and I think I've said it a few times during the podcast this year. I'm not surprised that this is his last year. Is he leaving before they tell him he can't come back?
Maybe, certainly. I don't think he would be. I don't think he would have been asked back.
Right. Okay.
A couple other notes. We didn't mention that you put this up there. Tomlin gave some props to Hubbard and Hawkins. Marcus Gilbert will be back. We mentioned briefly, but just something to note. Aaron Rodgers goes on the IR. Season over. No surprise there.
Yeah. Tomlin also talked about Mattekevich. Really didn't guarantee he'd be back in a defensive role this week against the Texans. Should he? Should you stick with Spence and Vince Williams inside right now? Where does Mattekevich figure in? I mean, let's face it. When Mattekevich took over for Jaire in that Cincinnati game before he got injured, he wasn't great. Is Spence more – which of the two would you rather have in there right now, Spence or Mattekevich?
Fort.
It don't look like you're going to get Fort.
Yeah, so.
and no, folks, Jesse James is not moving to linebacker to cover Gronk next time around. Bob Labriola was asked two questions about that in his ask and answer. Two people want to know if Jesse James can move to linebacker to cover Gronk next time.
Got a wide fan base. Yeah, very wide.
Once again, Vincent Achilles, thank you for the donation. Christopher Neal, thank you. Tom Rarick, thank you. George Vukovic, thank you. Darrell Hauser, it looks like. Thank you. Junior Anderson, thank you. Chris Chan, thank you. Brian Lando, thank you. James Warler, thank you. H. Tyson, thank you. Chris Welsh, thank you. I don't want to go. I'm going to leave somebody out here if I don't cut off. Anthony Herreras, thank you. Thomas Outterlone, I butchered that, Thomas, but thank you. Marcus Smith, thank you. William E. Ackerman IV, thank you. David Shepard, thank you. And this Anthony Galeno. I'll probably butcher that too. That takes us back to December. I'm sorry if I haven't got your name here. Look, my diatribe the other day. Look, just have some fun with me here. Obviously, I want you guys, Jens, to listen because that's why we do the show. Also, I do this as therapy. David probably not so much, but I think it shows that we both have fun with this and we try to be as objective as we can and try to cover a lot of things that you probably don't hear elsewhere on the radio, especially now that David's not on the air right now. So, don't take me so serious a lot of time is all I got to say there. David, you want to put anybody on blast before we get out of here?
No. We'll move along and have our picks Friday. Take a look around the NFL. We'll take a look at the overall Pro Bowl roster, the MVP vote, which maybe is narrowed down now to one or two guys, none of whom are Steelers, I don't think. I think it's Brady Wynn with Gurley and kind of Wentz, unfortunately, with his injury, maybe in third on that. And we'll go from there.
Yeah, in the meantime, follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the show, you can do so. Go to SteelersDepot.com and hit that donate button up right navigational bar. Don't laugh. All right, now I'm done.
All right. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.